Shrink Wrap Radio number 37, May 31st, 2006, Psychology and Longevity.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
Self-esteem, or lack of self-esteem, really is just one marker of depression. It's one aspect of depression. And by boosting the neurochemical mechanism that makes you feel good, people begin to feel better about themselves. Now, obviously, I do emphasize that you need to deal with what I call your unfinished business. Anything that makes you angry, guilty, or depressed, or anxious should be dealt with. But you've only got three solutions. I've been preaching this for over 35 years. You've got three possible solutions when something has bugged you. You can have a fight, an argument, or a lawsuit to try to get the person to change. You can divorce those that you cannot tolerate with joy, because if you divorce them with anger, you're no better off. Or you do what I call go for sainthood, accept and forgive those things you can't change. Now, that's easy. That's a left-brain approach. But by using some of the right-brain approaches, Gestalt techniques, the psychosynthesis techniques, some of the Jungian symbology, we can help people use the right brain approach to get insight.
That was the voice of today's guest, Dr. C. Norman Shealy. I've never had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Shealy, but we do have quite a few mutual acquaintances, and it was suggested to me that he'd be a great person to interview on Shrink Wrap Radio. So I thought we'd have a chat. In the process, I discovered that Dr. Shealy is one of the pioneers of the holistic health movement. I found out that he's an eminent physician with a long and successful career in both conventional and complementary medicine. And on top of this, I learned that he's the founder of the American Holistic Medical Association and the author of 22 books and 280 other publications. And as if this weren't enough, he's also the holder of a number of patents for a variety of medical devices. Most notably, he pioneered the use of spinal electrical stimulation as a technique for pain control. In fact, he's one of the world's leading experts in pain management. He was among the first physicians ever to specialize in the resolution of chronic pain. In 1971, he created the Shealy Institute, the first comprehensive pain and stress management facility in the U.S. In addition to his medical degree, he also went on to earn a Ph.D. in psychology. Dr. Shealy offers seminars and workshops worldwide, which are attended by physicians and laypersons alike. His most recent book is titled Life Beyond 100, and it focuses on issues relating to stress, depression, and self-esteem, in addition to such factors as exercise and nutrition in the quest for a longer and healthier life. So here's Dr. Shealy. My guest today is Dr. C. Norman Shealy. Dr. Shealy, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Okay, now, Norm, if I may call you so.
Of course.
Okay. you're one of the founders and leading spokespeople for the holistic health movement, or what's sometimes known as complementary medicine. And let's start out by having you give us a quick overview of your academic training and background.
Well, I went to Duke University undergraduate and medical schools, interned in internal medicine because I thought internal medicine internships were far better than surgical ones. Had a year of general surgery at Barnes Hospital, Washington University, 5 years of neurosurgical residency at the Mass General Hospital. I then spent 3.5 years on the faculty at Western Reserve. And I decided that the chairman of neurosurgery departments were not the kind of people I wanted to be associated with the rest of my life. And so I then went to the Gundersen Clinic in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where I started their neuroscience department. We soon had 3 neurologists, 3 neurosurgeons, and a neuropsychologist. And meanwhile, I had been doing a great deal of work on the physiology of pain and came up with dorsal column stimulation and TENS, or transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. Well, I started seeing 400 or more patients a year who had failed conventional medicine and drugs and surgery. And so in 1971, I decided to find some way of dealing with the people who had failed, and I started the first comprehensive pain clinic in the country, and I soon realized that I was dealing largely with psychological problems. And so in 1974, I decided to go back and get a PhD in psychology so I could understand these people. And I did that at Saybrook. And, of course, that was wonderful. I mean, that truly opened my eyes. And the reason I went into neurosurgery, I was interested in the mind. But I found that neurosurgeons were interested in anatomy, but not so much the mental and emotional and psychological aspects.
Oh, okay. And I should, for the sake of our listeners, you referred to Saybrook, and I should mention that the Saybrook Institute is a graduate institute for studying psychology in San Francisco.
And, of course, it is the premier humanistic psychology institute.
So now pain management centers are widespread. I mean, that's become an accepted focus of medical practice, but yours was really the first one?
That's right. And, you know, I started out with the idea, let's do anything that's safe.
Okay.
So I got into biofeedback very early, heard Elmer Green speak, talked with him, and Elmer became a mentor for many, many years. Elmer Green, of course, was the creator of biofeedback training. And then I got into past life therapy. If I had a single psychological tool, it would be past life therapy. I think it's a powerful tool.
Really? So is that using hypnosis to age regression?
No, actually, it's using a state of reverie. Some people go into a light hypnotic trance, but most are totally conscious.
Okay.
But with a little bit of guidance and the right setup, 90%+ of people will suddenly see themselves in a previous life experience, could be hundreds or thousands of years ago, but it always has metaphorical meaning in terms of their current life.
Yeah, now that's what I wanted to ask you about is, do you believe that they are literally experiencing a literal past life, or do you believe that it is at the metaphorical, imaginal level?
Well, I tend to believe that most of the time it is metaphor, but it's a lot easier for someone to say that Joe Smith in 1600 did something than that they did it in this life.
Okay, right.
And I think the subconscious, of course, loves to play games.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I've just recently become interested in shamanism, that is, getting involved with it in a more active way than I have in the past. And my sense of it is that it's working in an imaginal realm. I mean, that's the level that I take it at rather than literal.
I think is that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If it gives the patient insight and allows them to make change.
You know, I recently read some statistics indicating that the number of Americans using some form of complementary medicine now is huge.
Interestingly, it is indeed over 50% of people now use some complementary, alternative, holistic, integrative, all kinds of words have crept in, approach. In other words, they use something other than drugs and surgery.
Right, right. And so how did you get interested in the holistic health movement? You started out...
Well, after I started working with biofeedback and past life therapy in the early 70s, of course, I started talking, and I got out on the circuit, and we began to... Well, I got interested in Edgar Cayce's work down in Virginia Beach, and all of a sudden, the whole word holistic began to come up. And there was a group founded in San Diego, Association of Holistic Health, and they began to have meetings in the late, mid-70s, even 76 or so. And by 77, they called a meeting of holistic leaders. Well, 100 people got together, and most of them were a little bit flaky. I mean, to say the least.
Okay.
And after that, I wrote to 6 of my physician friends. I said, look, it's going down the tube if we don't do something. So we got together and decided to found the American Holistic Medical Association, which had its organizing meeting in May 1978 in Denver. We had 212 members. I always thought that was a wonderful metaphor for us. The boiling point had been reached.
Uh-huh.
And so today there are over 1,000 members, and there's a board, American Board of Holistic Medicine, with approaching 1,000 board-certified members.
Yeah, boy, it's really grown. I've been reading your latest book, which is about age extension, and there'll be a link to it on our website. And in your book, you assert that psychological factors play a large role in health and in longevity. And I guess now this idea is not as radical as it was when you first started to explore it. What's been your experience in this realm of the impact of our psychological life upon health and illness?
Well, ultimately, everything is really related to your attitude and your belief system, because that's how you choose habits. Now, my belief is that a vast majority of people, if they had kind, loving, nurturing parents, grow up remarkably intact. But unfortunately, for the last 2,000 years, people have been told that they're born in sin. For the last 5,000 years, women have been put down. And so there's this pervasive miasma of negativity that's been created by the churches to a large extent. I don't pull any bones about it anymore. People often ask me, why are so many people depressed? Well, if you've been told you were a sinner from the day you were born, and if you've been told that you're inferior, which is over 50% of the population, I mean, how can you not be depressed? I think it's a miracle that any of us grow up feeling good.
Mm-hmm. And you find that, I know in your book you really emphasize that depression has a very impactful, negative impact on health, on physical health. You cite a lot of biochemical markers that...
Oh, yes. I often say there are more biochemical abnormalities in depression than any other illness. We know that depressed people are deficient in magnesium. The vast majority of them are deficient in taurine, a very common amino acid. And, of course, all of them are deficient in 1 to 7 of the essential amino acids. They have low beta endorphins. They tend to have usually low but sometimes high production of serotonin. They tend to have low but sometimes high levels of norepinephrine or, quote, adrenaline. They're often melatonin. And they're often acetylcholine or cholinesterase, which is the one we can actually measure, the enzyme that breaks it down. And then DHEA is in at least half of them rock bottom below normal, and the other half are in the lower half of an optimal level, or below an optimal level, in the lower half of the range. So 100% of people with depression have numerous biochemical and neurochemical abnormalities. By the way, cortisol tends to go up, testosterone tends to go down. So it's a wide spectrum of chemical abnormalities.
Right, and in your book you also talk about cell yeast work and stress, and so I guess the result of all of these various biochemical markers not being where they should be is that there's some kind of wearing down of the bodily systems. Is that right?
That's right. You know, stress ultimately clobbers the immune system. Just being angry raises your... Interestingly, one of the greatest markers is high-sensitivity C-reactive protein, which is an inflammatory marker. One of the common causes of a high C-reactive protein is anger.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you have negative feelings about antidepressant medications. Is that right?
Well, the way I put it about antidepressant drugs is this. The best of these, according to the statistics published in the Physician's Desk Reference, the best is 42% effective, with a minimum of 25% complications. Actually, you really should say a minimum of 50%, because 50% of men and women lose their libido or become impotent on antidepressant drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can get 85% of people out of depression totally safely, no complications, no drugs, within 2 weeks.
Now, that's quite a claim. How do you do that?
Well, for the last 31 years, we have used a little stimulator called the LISS, L-I-S-S, cranial electrical stimulator. It's so safe, you could drive your car while wearing it. In fact, I've done that many times. I've used it on planes going to and from Europe. It helps prevent jet lag. It resets your serotonin mechanism, helps you sleep better, raises beta endorphins. We can get 50% of people out in 2 weeks just using the LISS stimulator.
Now, this is a device of your own invention, and you've patented
well,
it, right?
Well, I discovered its use. Saul LISS is an engineer from New Jersey who brought it to me because I had introduced TENS, or transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. And his device puts out only a maximum of 4 milliamps, whereas the ones we usually use for pain put out 60 to 80 milliamps. But I found that when you put it on the head at 1 or 2, even 1 milliamp or a little less, you actually see flickering lights, and that's what intrigued me. And so our first study was to show that it normalized serotonin metabolism in 80% of people. And we can put with that photostimulation, flashing lights at 1 to 7 cycles per second, when we add that to the LISS stimulator, doing nothing else, we'll get 85% of people out of depression.
Now, I have to ask this, and I don't mean to be antagonistic, but if such a device is that effective, why isn't it more widely used and known?
Well, I think it's quite obvious. I have published over a dozen papers on it. I've treated 30,250 people. I have given talks at dozens of conferences. Unfortunately, because the physicians have been so brainwashed by the pharmacomafia, they don't do it. It's not a drug. Physicians over the last 60 years have become pawns of the pharmacomafia. Not all, but most.
I want to call attention to this word you're using, because people may not have heard it. Pharmacomafia? In other words, that the pharmacology industry is kind of functioning like the mafia?
You bet. They are dishonest. They lie, they deceive, they hire people to give fake results. And even the vice president of Merck, within the last 6 months, was quoted internationally saying, well, you know that less than 50% of people benefit from our drugs. There's a place for drugs.
Yeah, right.
But I think that place is about 15% of what is being used right now.
Okay. Now, have you done any kind of a double-blind study with this LISS device?
Oh, yes. All of this has been done. We've been doing it over and over again for over 30 years. And, you know, other people who do take it up, there's a neurosurgeon in Dayton, Ohio, who's now become quite enthusiastic about it. And there's a hospital up in Soldotna, Alaska, that's now using it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got half a dozen physicians who are now using it.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the same results I do.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds great. Now, you also talk about... that low self-esteem, and maybe that's not exactly the same thing as depression, but certainly related. What do you do? And you say that low self-esteem also has a very negative impact on health and on longevity. What is a person who reads your book What's your recommendation that they do if they do have low self-esteem? I mean, how do you bootstrap yourself up from low to...
Well, of course, it's interesting that we find that when people get their serotonin and beta endorphin up, they begin to feel better about themselves as well. Self-esteem or lack of self-esteem really is just one marker of depression. It's one aspect of depression. And by boosting the neurochemical mechanism that make you feel good, people begin to feel better about themselves. Now, obviously, I do emphasize that you need to deal with what I call your unfinished business. Anything that makes you angry, guilty, or depressed, or anxious should be dealt with. But you've only got three solutions. I've been preaching this for over 35 years. You've got three possible solutions when something has bugged you. You can have a fight, an argument, or a lawsuit. You can try to get the person to change. You can divorce those that you cannot tolerate with joy, because if you divorce them with anger, you're no better off. Or you do what I call go for sainthood, accept and forgive those things you can't change. Now, that's easy. That's a left-brain approach. But by using some of the right-brain approaches, Gestalt techniques, psychosynthesis techniques, some of the Jungian symbology, we can help people use the right brain approach to get insight and aim. A single session of past life therapy often is a turning point for people.
That begins to touch on some other topics like intuition and imagination, visualization. So I guess the past life therapy really uses factors like intuition, imagination, and visualization.
Of course, I think everybody has intuition, and some of us develop it and use it spontaneously more than others. But if you can, quote, remember what a rose looks like, if you can remember what a lemon tastes like, you've got imagination. And you can develop it. And of course, I've worked with highly intuitive people who have specific intuitive skills, like Bob Lightman, a physician who's one of the best medical diagnosticians. I've worked with Carolyn Mace for 22 years. Both of them can make a diagnosis with a high degree of accuracy without seeing the patient. You know, Bob worked with a psychiatrist for 3 years. He's an internist.
Okay.
He spent 3 years sitting in his apartment making diagnoses on the psyche of Dr. Allison's patient.
Doing it remotely.
He's so good. He can read your psyche with 96% accuracy.
Now, I've not heard of him. I've heard of Carolyn. Is the name pronounced Mays? I've never known how to pronounce it. It's M-Y-S-S.
She pronounces it as if it was M-A-C-E.
Okay, Mace. And you've co-authored some books with her, right?
Yes, we've written two books together, The Creation of Health and Pathway to Transformation.
Okay. And what's the role of visualization in your work?
Well, I think the most important thing is for people to learn to create positive images of what they want to accomplish. One of my favorite tools, which I learned back in the very early 70s, is autogenic training. And, of course, autogenic training is a superb mental left brain and right brain approach integrated. You use words, but you also create images to reinforce the words. So if you're saying, my arms and legs are heavy and warm, you imagine the sun beaming down upon them. Autogenic training, even as of 1969, had over 2,600 scientific references.
Interesting. Yeah, I've been aware of it for some time, but it's still, it's one of those things that a lot of people have never heard of. Was it in Germany or Austria?
No, it was in Germany. Johann H. Schultz.
Okay.
He wrote his first book in 1932.
Right, so it really goes back a ways, but he combined the techniques of a visualization and deep relaxation, right?
That is correct. And there's excellent evidence that, and published extensively, that if people will just practice autogenic training for 3 to 6 months, they can actually control about 80% of stress illnesses.
Yeah, I was intrigued by that in your book because, as I say, I've known about autogenic training for some time, but I did not realize that it had been applied successfully to such a wide range of physical ailments.
Well, one of one of our graduate students at Forest Institute of Professional Psychology here did his doctoral dissertation using nothing but a 12-minute basic autogenic tape for fibromyalgia, and in 1 month had strikingly successful results.
Wow.
And of course, I've used it for 34 years.
Is that a tape that's available on your website? I know you have a number of things.
Yeah, I call
things.
It Basic Schultz to give credit to Dr. Schultz.
Okay. And I had at least one listener who wanted me to get somebody on to talk about energy psychology, and I think you probably fall in that realm of...
yes. I'm doing a keynote in this fall at the Energy Psychology Conference in Toronto.
Okay, now I suspect many of my listeners have never heard the term energy psychology, don't know what it would refer to, so give us a primer on this.
Well, of course, everything is energy. I mean, we physically are bits and pieces, if you will, of condensed energy, both light and sound. So taking that beyond the physical fact or the physics fact of everything in nature, there are many techniques such as Reiki, all kinds of healing techniques like that. There are the rapid eye movement techniques that are used. We've done a lot of work with healers. I've demonstrated in 116 different people that a healer can send energy, healing energy, whatever that means, from a distance up to 1,000 miles and strikingly affect the electroencephalogram.
I had not heard this. Now, you're also trained as an acupuncturist, is that right?
That's right. I've practiced acupuncture since 1967. And acupuncture is a tremendous energy technique. Again, as a neurosurgeon, and of course I also studied neurophysiology extensively, almost got my PhD in neurophysiology, working with Sir John Eccles, and then I decided psychology was more important for me.
Mm-hmm.
We are electrical and chemical beings. Everything in our body that takes place is the result of, if you will, electrical chemistry or chemical electricity. We send impulses because of movement of sodium and potassium and calcium and magnesium. And those are things that, that's energy. That's basic chemical energy taking place in our bodies. And, of course, we get blocks in those energies because, I think Wilhelm Reich had a lot of good stuff in his repertoire, too. We had a lot of muscle tension. Reich said he'd never seen anybody in the Western world who had an unlocked pelvis.
Right.
We tend to go around, crunching our bodies because of fear, poor self-esteem. I'm always with teenagers that I run into getting after about their posture, because if you slouch, you begin to create postural abnormalities that have physical reactions and chemical reactions and electrical reactions in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know that muscle tension can actually turn off the blood flow to an organ
mm-hmm.
inside the body.
Mm-hmm.
Reich, of course, believed that every illness was to a great extent the result of muscle tension cutting off blood flow and not getting enough oxygen.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners, I should comment that Wilhelm Reich was one of the earlier disciples of Sigmund Freud, but at some point he kind of went his own direction and really emphasized the body. So in a way, he's the progenitor of an awful lot of this holistic work.
Well, he is, and of course, he's certainly a progenitor of energy psychology, Neo-Reichian stuff especially.
Mm-hmm.
Bowen and John Perakis and other people like that have carried him on.
Right. Well, I think we've touched on most of the points that I had in my notes here. I wonder if there is anything that I haven't asked you about that you'd want people to know.
Well,
that...
there are some other things I think that people need to think about.
Okay.
We know that there are four habits that are absolutely crucial to basic health. And those four habits are no smoking, a body mass index between 19 and 24, eating a minimum of 5 servings of fruits or vegetables a day, and exercising a minimum of 30 minutes 3 times a week. Now, of those 4 basic health habits, and this actually, the research on this came out only in last December. It didn't, this particular fact didn't make it to the book. But less than 3% of Americans have all those 4 habits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, without those 4 habits, you're not going to live a long time. The average American has a life that is shortened by 22 years because of primarily obesity and smoking, but also inactivity.
Yeah.
Which contributes to obesity. And if people just had these habits, I believe within 10 years, the average life expectancy would go up 10 or 12 years, and within 20 or 30 years, average life expectancy would go up to 100. Now, a lot of people don't want to live to be 100, but that's because they think people get decrepit as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've known physicians who are 92 years of age, still practicing full-time and more active and alert than a lot of 60-year-olds or even 40-year-olds. And so we know that it's possible. My great-grandmother at 101, when I last visited her, was in her kitchen canning getting ready for winter. And I said, Grandma, how do you feel? She says, Bud, I feel just as good as I did when I was 16.
Wow.
And to me, that's normal and that's healthy. And so I always knew as a child, after reading my great-great-grandfather's diary, that I would live to be at least 100.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I now believe I can live to be 140. But in order to do that, I've not only got to have the good health habits, I've got to keep my DHEA up, not by taking it, but through natural means, keep my calcitonin up so my skeleton doesn't deteriorate, and keep free radicals down. And those are the 3 things that I think are the most exciting aspects of my book to me. Because when I finished the research on all of those, I knew that that was the secret to extended life healthily.
Well, I'll tell you, it's sure challenging me to get my level of physical exercise back up. I used to do a lot of bicycling and other forms of exercise, and I'll tell you, I've gotten so sucked into the computer and podcasting that I'm sitting all the time, and I've really got to...
Now, let me give you a suggestion.
Okay.
I do a lot of computer work also. I have a mini trampoline in front of my computer. My computer's up on a shelf. So I work 3 to 12 hours a day at my computer, but I'm standing all the time, and because it's an elastic surface, I have to move constantly.
Huh. So in other words, you're not necessarily bouncing up and down on the trampoline.
No, I'm just standing there moving, but if I have to wait, you know, every time, once in a while, you have to wait 30 seconds or so, I bounce during that time. It's a wonderful alternative to sitting all day.
I'm going to have to give that some consideration.
I actually get 2 hours of real exercise every day in addition to that.
Yeah, I read your regimen in the book. It was pretty impressive. Would it be too rude of me to ask how old you are now?
I can't imagine not doing it.
Yeah, how old are you now?
73.
All right. And
I still feel, interestingly, I don't feel 16. I feel better at 26 than I did at 16.
And
I still feel 26.
And I invite people to read your book. That exercise regimen that you describe is pretty impressive. And you're doing that now at 73.
Oh, yes.
Like 100 sit-ups a day?
5 hours a week, plus all these other things.
Well, I'm going to put a link to your book on the website and also put a link to your website so that interested listeners can get a lot more information, because you've got a ton of information on your website. And I want to thank you for spending this time with us.
Well, thank you. And remember that they can sign up for my free email newsletter every week, too.
Okay. And how would they do that? Is that on the website?
Yes. Just go to normsheely.com and they'll find me.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much, Norm.
Thank you, and have a great, great day.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Shealy. One of the things that hits home for me, both in this interview and in his book, is the importance of physical exercise in promoting both physical and psychological health. From a holistic point of view, it doesn't even make sense to talk about physical and psychological in the way I just did, because the psychological is not separate from the physical, and the physical is not separate from the psychological. The psychological and physical are just two of the many faces of a single system, and even the boundaries we place on that system are somewhat arbitrary and artificial. What I mean is that the boundaries that define me as separate from other parts of the environment don't really exist in any hard and fast sense. But I digress. Getting back to the importance of physical exercise, Dr. Shealy says in his book, quote, "With hundreds of physiological and longevity studies now proving unequivocally that physical exercise is one of the greatest determinants of health, state of the body and mind, as well as longevity, inactivity should not be an option," end quote. A few paragraphs later, he writes, quote, "Inactivity is associated with marked and debilitating psychiatric conditions ranging from panic disorder, hypochondriasis, depression, and multiple phobias," end quote. So I hope you're listening to this podcast on a walk or in the gym or bicycling or something active, unlike me who's recording this podcast in a sedentary position. I'm afraid I'm deteriorating before your very ears. I used to be a lot more active, and I've got to make more time and energy for that. Dr. Shealy is putting me to shame. You heard his report that he's 73 years old. In his book, here's how he describes his current exercise regimen. He says, quotes, "My own exercise program consists of a minimum of 4 hours per week on a health rider with 50 pounds of weight on it, 100 sit-ups, and 100 back-ups each day on a Roman chair, and walking 30 to 60 minutes every day, as well as a minimum of 20 minutes of yoga daily." So it sounds like Dr. Shealy is practicing what he preaches, and the rest of us should take inspiration from his example. Dr. Shealy's transition from neurosurgeon to holistic medicine pioneer is an interesting one. In some of our earlier shows, we've touched on various aspects of parapsychology and psychic phenomena. Well, it turns out that this realm impacted his career. I don't know how many listeners will be familiar with Edgar Cayce, who lived from 1877 to 1945 and was one of America's leading psychics. And Cayce, by the way, is spelled C-A-Y-C-E. In particular, Edgar Cayce was best known as a, quote, "medical intuitive." Although he lacked much in the way of formal schooling, he was reportedly able to diagnose illnesses and prescribe effective remedies for people at a distance. He would do this while in a state of hypnotic trance. A large number of these trance sessions were recorded and archived, and people continue to study these transcripts today. In fact, there's an organization devoted to the preservation and furtherance of Cayce's work. It's called the Association for Research and Enlightenment, or the ARE, and it's headquartered in Virginia Beach, Virginia. According to the ARE's website, it was founded in 1931 by Edgar Cayce to research and explore transpersonal subjects such as holistic health, ancient mysteries, personal spirituality, dreams and dream interpretation, intuition and philosophy, and reincarnation. In his introduction to his book, Dr. Shealy describes the impact of Cayce and the ARE on his own thinking and practice. Let me read a little to you from the introduction to Shealy's book. For the sake of brevity, I'll be condensing it a bit. Dr. Shealy writes, "In 1972, I had just completed my first year of transition from neurosurgeon to comprehensive physician, expanding my ideas of electrical therapy for pain control into the realms of behavioral modification, stress reduction, biofeedback, and self-care. These were somewhat revolutionary concepts then. In the fall of that same year, I attended my first ARE conference. To a great extent, that week was, for me, the beginning of the rupture of the mental hymen. I became acquainted with the work of Edgar Cayce, castor oil packs, color therapy, past life therapy, and many more classic Cayce approaches to health. I had my first out-of-body experience and a prolonged cosmic intuitive knowing after a past life therapy session. In the 30-plus years that have passed since that conference, I have had the pleasure of attending ARE events dozens of times, always leaving feeling enlightened, always feeling at home with those at the ARE, and in fact, it was a subsequent ARE workshop in 1975 that I first encountered the concept of holism, which led me in 1978 to found the American Holistic Medical Association and later the Holos Institute of Health Incorporated and Holos University Graduate Seminary. Since then, I've continued to seek safe alternatives to drugs and surgery for the 85% of individuals who I believe do not need those approaches. Now, given this background with the Edgar Cayce material, we shouldn't be surprised that Dr. Shealy has gone on to collaborate with Dr. Carolyn Mace, whom he mentioned briefly in our interview. Carolyn Mace is a contemporary medical intuitive who has written a number of books and is an extremely popular lecturer. I'm hoping that maybe, through Dr. Norm Shealy, I may be able to secure an interview with her for Shrink Wrap Radio. Finally, I should mention that, as with everything remotely psychic, there is controversy surrounding Edgar Cayce's work. You can find a lot of information about his life and work, both pro and con, by doing a Google search on his name. And before I leave this segment, I want to express my gratitude once more to Dr. Shealy for sharing his very eclectic and courageous pioneering work with us.
Hey, this is Matt Van Nuys, and you are on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
Thanks to my son Matthew for providing that transition. I want to remind you of our GoDaddy promotion. If you're thinking of buying a domain name, transferring a domain, or getting some web hosting, I have some discount codes that can save you some money. Just go to our site at shrinkwrapradio.com and look in the left-hand margin of the shows page, and you'll find a link to three different promotional codes that will entitle you to some great discounts. And while you are looking at the left-hand side of the shows page at shrinkwrapradio.com, you'll also see two other items there. One is a link to our Frapper map. If you haven't already done so, please put yourself on our Frapper map, which allows you to place a digital push pin on the location where you live. You can get there from our site at shrinkwrapradio.com or by going directly to www.frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio. And as always, Frapper is spelled F-R-A-P-P-R. We now have 93 pins on the map, which is wonderful. At the same time, some of our recent episodes have had more than 2,000 downloads, which is even more wonderful. So where are the other 1,900 of you? Take a moment and go to our homepage, find the Frapper link, and let us see where you are. I get such a thrill each time I discover a new pin on the map. And even bigger thrill when I discover new countries. And here's a shout-out to a few of the recent additions. So we give a shout-out to Mary Ann in Bellevue, Nebraska, to Phil in Pretoria, South Africa, our first listener that we know of on the African continent. So thanks so much for taking the time to do that, Phil. Elise in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Leslie in Denver, Colorado, Nigel in Melbourne, Australia, Martin in, is it Ellie or Eli, England, I'm not sure. William in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Orion, or is it Orion, in New York City. PD in Chicago. And Cindy in Monroe, Connecticut. So thanks to all of you. As you can see, this is your chance for fame and fortune. Sign up on our Frapper map and get your name read out to the whole planet. The other thing you'll notice on the left-hand side of our show's page is a button which will allow you to subscribe to a service that sends the most recent episode of our show to your cell phone. The service costs you nothing. I have yet to hear from anyone who has used it. If you have used it, please let me know what you think about it. Now, speaking of feedback, I'd really like to hear from you about our opening music. For a long time, I opened with a jazz piano selection. This show and the last one, I substituted a somewhat Beatles-sounding jingle, which I commissioned especially for Shrink Wrap Radio. On the one hand, I like the energy and fun of this vocal jingle, but I'm wondering if it's too frivolous and out of keeping with the tone of the show. What do you think? With your indulgence, I'm going to play them both for you right now, back to back. Please let me know which one you think I should go with. First will be the jazz intro, and then the new vocal intro. So, here's contestant number one. And although the jazz piece goes on, generally the voiceover would cut in about here. And here's contestant number two.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Well, there you have it. Clearly number two is also longer than number one. We could shorten up number two if you thought that would improve it. Well, I'd sure love to know what you think. Please send me an email and let me know how you vote. Okay, now for some highlights from recent emails. By the way, don't bother writing me to tell me I got the levels all wrong on this particular episode. I'm painfully aware of it already. I had a bad Skype connection with Dr. Sheely, and I was also struggling with very annoying background hiss. I'll do my best to make the sound quality of the next show better. This first email is one I received from a local listener, Catherine, who writes, I was listening to your podcast from Ireland today while walking around Spring Lake in Santa Rosa. What a treat. I felt like I was in an Ireland pub with all the background singing, chatter, and beer drinking. I was led to your site through the Sonoma State magazine, and she puts in parentheses, I work at the university. And just wanted to cheer you on for doing this great podcast and finding interesting people to talk to. Keep up the great work, Catherine. Catherine, thanks so much for that note. Yes, there was an article profiling Shrink Wrap Radio in a university publication, and I guess that's how Catherine found the show. And reflecting on her email, I realized that sometimes I like to walk around Spring Lake, which is a beautiful park in Santa Rosa. And I see people that are listening to their iPods, and how interesting and ironic it would be if I were walking by someone who was actually listening to Shrink Wrap Radio. That was kind of an exciting thought to me. The next email comes from Michelle, a listener in France, who writes, Hello, Dr. Dave. You've consistently asked for news from your listeners. I'm usually rather discreet, but I so value your podcasts that I feel compelled to write. In parentheses, by my own volition and not yours. Firstly, let me tell you why I so appreciate your podcast, and then I'll tell you a little bit about who I am. I think you're an excellent interviewer. I don't know if you realize it, but it is not your professionalism, but your humanism that makes your interviews so captivating. You are truly interested in what your guests have to say, and so you allow us to be truly interested as well. You ask the questions we would like to ask, and make the comments we would like to make. It helps as well that you have fascinating, intelligent, and adroit guests who clearly have a deep understanding of their field. I believe that it is this understanding of a subject that renders it so simple to follow. Let me interject, Michelle, how grateful I am for these comments. They really encourage me to keep at it. Michelle goes on to say, I thank you for taking the time and making the effort to share your knowledge and the knowledge of others in the area of psychology. I hope the fulfillment of knowing you can play a role in the lives of people unknown or known to you is at least partial compensation for your time and energy. Indeed, it is. Now a little about me. I will try to keep this short. I did a 4-year degree specializing in neuropsychology a long time ago. I had always wanted to be a psychiatrist, but when I began studying the knowledge in the area, okay, it was very superficial exposure, it seemed so subjective, so based on personal preference, that I felt afraid that in making the wrong choice I could really harm someone. I turned then to neuropsychology because what we know of the brain is what we know, and my opinions had nothing to do with it. I realize now, listening to your podcasts, that we've come a long way. I'm not suggesting that Freud, Jung, and Erikson are not solid bases to psychoanalysis, but it appears that we are now treating people more as a whole than as an assembly of distinct parts. Let me add, insert here parenthetically, it's interesting that you're writing about treating people as a whole rather than distinct parts, and that your letter arrives just in time for a show that's devoted to a guest who's talking about a holistic approach. Okay, back to the letter. An analogy struck me when listening to your podcast with Gerald Trumbull on the death of psychology. He said he enjoyed taking, I've forgotten, radios or transistors apart as a child and had the parts stuck on his wall. You asked him if he were able to put them together again, and he replied that he wasn't. Oh, no, he replied that wasn't the point. Well, it struck me that psychology can be a bit like that, taking people apart without knowing how or even worrying about putting them back together again. Having said that, I think that is more where we are coming from than where we are going, and I rejoice in that fact. Anyway, I will strive to make this brief. I have a deep love for psychology, which means I have a deep love for people in general, and am finally headed back towards it after discovering something called haptonomy a few years ago. And she, I'm not sure if it's a he or a she when the name is Michelle, but at any rate, Michelle gives the web address. If you were interested in learning more about haptonomy, you can go to http://haptonomy.org, haptonomy. She says, rather, Michelle says, I will let the website explain it to you as I'm only beginning to discover what it's all about, but it strikes a very deep chord within me, and I feel it is something real which can bring people real sense of themselves, perhaps. I'll begin my course in haptopsychotherapy in November and will begin working on my master's degree at the same time. I've gone full circle now and have come back to my calling. Your podcasts offer so much material for reflection and have arrived just at the right time. I hope I can be as generous in sharing what I have to offer as you have been. Thank you again, Dr. Dave, and please stick around a little. Kindest regards, Michelle. Michelle, thank you so much for that encouragement. And sometimes I look at myself pleading for these emails and wonder, am I really so needy? And I guess the short answer must be yes. But I'll tell you, putting these shows together does in fact require a lot more time and commitment, I think, than I initially realized. You might be surprised to learn, as I am surprised to learn, that it's taking me about 10 to 15 hours to put each episode together. I don't know why, but that just seems to be how much effort it requires. Not that I'm complaining, mind you, but those emails do help me to keep my efforts up. Finally, I'll read one more short email from Marianne in Nebraska, who writes, Dear Dr. Dave, just wanted to write and tell you how much I appreciate your podcast, Shrink Wrap Radio. I live in Nebraska, and I've been kind of heading toward a transition, toward a transitional time in my life. I've come to a realization that I'm not defined by my success at work, but more by my success in the world, and most specifically with my children and my husband. I found your podcast and it really spoke to me, and I began to seek peace within. I have really made some great strides in self-healing. I have many questions, but if I could ask about one thing, I've been wondering about while I listen to your interpretations of dreams, is do you have an opinion on the meaning and or cause of deja vu dreams? I have always been prone to have these types of dreams, and I wondered what kind of significance they had. Well, keep up the great work, and I'll be listening. Thanks, Marianne. Thanks for that note, Marianne, and I think I'll need to have you send me a follow-up email explaining more what you mean by deja vu dreams, because I think of deja vu as a phenomenon that happens during the waking state, involving a strong feeling of having been there before, so to speak. So I'm not quite sure how that happens in your dream. Perhaps you can drop me a line and explain it in a little bit more detail, and then maybe I'll be able to make some intelligent comment. Okay, that's it for today. As I've already mentioned, your listener email and feedback are the fuel this show runs on. You can send it to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. My username on Skype is ShrinkPod. I even have a page on MySpace, and the name there is also ShrinkPod. I haven't done much with the MySpace page for lack of time and knowledge. If there's a knowledgeable volunteer with the time and energy to spiff it up, please let me know. And we have a call-in number where you can leave voicemail. That number is 206-888-2746. Please help spread the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you have a podcast or a blog, we'd sure appreciate a plug there. As usual, we close today's show now with a piece of PodSafe music. It's called Wake Up by Michael Gomez, and you'll find a link to the artist on the website. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Around three, head pounding, I take a look around me. I'm surrounding myself with negativity, and it's sounding like I will never breathe. And I'm drowning, the bills don't wanna leave. I hate working, but cash I must achieve. With snakes lurking, no time for my family. My soul's hurting, this ain't my destiny. That's for certain, there's nothing but emptiness in the world, only God can fill me up. What is love, but the temptations are strong. I need to pray if you wanna change the path you're on. And say,
I need to wake up, I forgot what's important now. Wake up, cause money ain't everything. Wake up, all I do is drink all day now. Wake up, I gotta do it for my family. Wake up, I forgot what's important now. Wake up, I'm losing my sanity. Wake up, got the one that can save me. Wake up, I gotta get my life together now.
I look around, all I see are snakes, and they lie, steal, hate, cheat. I know it, everybody knows it. I see their face and they're up to no good, cause they lie, steal, hate, cheat. I know it, everybody knows it.
I ask God humbly, make me a servant. I ask for mercy, I don't deserve it. Cause thoughts I'm a slave to all perverted, and cash is my idol. I need to change, I'm always chasing that money that people will kill for. There's never enough of that money. There's nothing but misery with that money. There's nothing but emptiness in the world. Only God can fill me up. What is love, but the temptations are strong. I need to pray if you wanna change the path you're on. Then say,
I need to wake up, I forgot what's important now. Wake up, cause money ain't everything. Wake up, all I do is drink all day now. Wake up, I gotta do it for my family. Wake up, I forgot what's important now. Wake up, I'm losing my sanity. Wake up, God's the one that can save me. Wake up, I gotta get my life together now.
I just got a new whip, I need another one. I just got a new crib, I need a bigger one. I just got a new job, I need a better one. I just got 10 G's, already spent it doing what I gotta do to eat. It's all a game as I'm walking down the street. These are the same, same song and the same beat. On the radio,
losing misery.
On the the TV.
There's nothing but emptiness in the world. Only God can fill me up with his love. But the temptations are strong. I need to pray if you want to change the path you're on.